Quest for Truth, Episode 282.
Quest for Truth, presented by Protectorate Productions and HPN, Helsley Podcast Network. Now located at life-truth.com. And now, here are your hosts, Keith Helsley and Nathan Caldwell. They'll keep you jumping around, like a hungry flea at a dog show.
Welcome, everyone. This is your host, Keith, and it's time for another episode of Quest for Truth. And at the moment, I am in my outdoor studio. Sometimes it's a nice day. There's not a lot in the way of chirpy birds to interrupt, which is my main nemesis outdoors. Maybe an occasional truck going by, but I can deal with that most of the time. But before we get started, I'll probably be joined in a little bit by our co-host Nathan Caldwell to contribute some ideas. I wanted to feature one of our other brand new podcasters on the Christian Podcast Community. At least he's not brand new. I don't know how old he is. His podcast probably isn't brand new, but he's new to the network, the community, and that is Bad Hackers.
What's up, Dad Hackers? My name is Patrick Antonucci, and I am the host and founder of this podcast and community of Dad Hackers. Whether you're new here or have been here for a long time, I want to personally welcome you. Dad Hackers is a community of Christian fathers who are devoted to encouraging, equipping, and enabling one another to become the men that God has created and designed us to be, so that we can raise up the next generation of fully devoted followers of Christ and leave a legacy of multi-generational faithfulness. On this show, we primarily interview Christian men to dive into their experiences and insights into what it means to be a Christian man, a Christian husband, a Christian father, and a leader. We ask questions that dig deep into the thinking and rationale of these men so that we can all learn and grow into the men that God is calling us to be. I'm grateful you've joined us today. Make sure you subscribe so that you never miss any of our episodes. Also, be sure to leave an honest review. Reviews help to boost the show's ratings, which means that more dads are going to come across our show and benefit from the content that we put out. I wanted to let you know that we also have a free private Facebook group just for Christian men. So head on over to facebook.com/group/dadhacker and apply to join by answering the three questions when prompted. So that's facebook.com/group/dadhacker.
All I can really tell you is I don't have the contact info for their podcast RSS feed or website directly, but I do, or I could recommend, as always, because hey, we're all on the same community, visit christianpodcastcommunity.org. I think if you add /shows, you'll see all the shows that are there, but I think there's probably a link on the page there somewhere. I think it's way down towards the bottom. But look for Dad Hackers. It's just like you might imagine. It's a dad talking about dad stuff, how to be a better dad, how to be a better Christian, how to be just better at life. I've listened to a few of the shows, and it's just really good. He does some interviews, he does some solo things, and just check him out. And as always, while you're on the ChristianPodcastCommunity.org website and you have his show pulled up, Bad Hackers, there's an email form. Fill it out, drop him a line, and say that you found him, and give him a word of encouragement, because that always helps. Now, with our main topic,
Commands of Christ, presented by Nathan Caldwell.
It's love, just flat out love. And love God, love the Lord with all your heart, all your soul,
all your mind. The first and greatest commandment.
Of course, the second one, love your neighbor.
As yourself.
As yourself.
You know, somebody might be asking, do you have to love your neighbor to be saved? No, that's not how you be saved, but I'm telling you, sometimes you might have to be saved to love your neighbor.
That was Commands of Christ, presented by Nathan Coleman.
Main topic.
What I want to talk about is a particular instance in the life of King David. A while back, on one of our episodes, Nathan and I were commenting on some of the protests. I think it might have been our Black Lives Matter episode about a month or so ago. And it came to mind that the Bible never talks about rioting. There's plenty of better ways to protest than that. But I thought, you know, there was an instance that involves Absalom, and I just kind of left it there. Well, I wanted to have a really closer look at what's happening there. I just wanted to see, did the Bible really condone a violent response? If you don't get your way, you react with violence. Well, Absalom seems to do that. So I wanted to take a look at this. Now, I want to review some things in the life of King David. You know, from 2 Samuel, beginning at chapter 1, through about chapter 10, it talks about David, you know, after Saul's death, he's coming into power. He makes some good moves, some bad moves. God supports him in winning battles and defeating enemies and the like. And he's really rolling right along. Well, he gets to an instance in chapter 11 where he has his famous mistake with Bathsheba. And I'm not going to go into this very deep. He tries to sleep under the rug, has her husband Uriah killed.
Unfortunately, I do not have a lot of time lately, and that has it's messed with a lot of recording situations, because when I have time, I'm watching kids and there's a lot of background noise and that causes problems. However, there are a few things I know about David's family strife, and it started when David lusted and committed adultery with Bathsheba. Bathsheba became pregnant. David killed her husband, and he did so through military means, putting him on the front lines, knowing he would die. Then he married Bathsheba.
In chapter 12, the prophet Nathan comes to him with a parable and a prophecy, and David repents.
Nathan comes along, the prophet, and he says, you know, this is, he tells him a story about a man who had one sheep, and the neighbor who had many, many, but the neighbor who was rich stole the one sheep and killed it and cooked it. Fed it to his guests instead of using his own sheep. David was mad, and Nathan told him, you're the man.
He doesn't get off scot-free. He doesn't get a free ride. He escapes God's wrath directly, but he's warned that the child he had with Bathsheba will not live, and the sword will never leave his house.
David repented, so he didn't have to die. However, because this sin was a public sin, people knew about it. Actually, what he said is, you did this in secret, but I'm going to kind of air your dirty laundry. Because you've given people occasion to blaspheme the Lord or something to that effect. And so the sword would never leave his family, and the child that they had would die. The sword never leaving his family, that's where you get the trouble with Absalom.
So here's where it starts, right there. By the king, the government, did something wrong, and it splashed over into something else. Let's just move on along from that, step away from that. Because, of course, in the preceding passages, Bathsheba's son does die, but she's comforted by having Solomon. And David has some comfort when he captures a city that was being held under siege. Moving on to chapter 13, let's kind of run through this real fast, too. There's an instance where one of David's sons, Amnon, rapes his sister. I'm not going to get into all the details, because that's a whole teaching all of its own. And so Absalom plots to murder his brother Amnon. Now there's some unexpected violence in our story that I didn't anticipate covering today, but it's violence nonetheless. He had this thing, this injustice. Now, he didn't handle it well, if you ask me. He just took the law into his own hands. He should have taken it to the king. He could have taken it to the courts of law. My guess is maybe their royalty, the king's family, they were trying to sweep this embarrassment under the rug. But how under the rug could it be? It's here in the Bible for everyone, generations to follow, to see. But it's important that there's an injustice happened. A divinity happened. And Absalom tried to seek his own satisfaction. Now, did he get satisfaction? Well, David, at first, thought all of his sons were lost, but that wasn't true. But Absalom flees to a city that's out, I think it's outside of outside of the nation. The name will pop up in a few moments as we read some scripture. He flees, and he's gone for 3 years. Now, what's happening while he's gone? David, the king, grieves for his lost son. He's probably also grieving for the fact that his daughter was raped, apparently a very beautiful woman.
Keith, you asked what caused the rift, and, you know, there was the rape of Tamar, and it was handled badly. Was it justified? I'll let you deal with that part, but ultimately, in my opinion, it was not the rape of Tamar that caused the rift. What caused the rift was David's initial sin, because that was where the consequence of the sword not leaving David's house came from.
And moving into our focus here in chapter 14, Absalom, after 3 years, is restored to David. We see that Joab, which is, you know, the right-hand man, the commander of the armies, sees that David is really is grieved that Absalom has fled and has been gone. That being the king, he just can't, you know, have him back. I mean, I'm sure it's political posturing there. But Joab sees this, and he has this big elaborate plan. He has a woman come in and claim that she has a rift in her family and wants David to patch it up. I think Joab must have took a card from the playbook whenever Nathan the prophet told his parable. But anyway, David sees through it, and he says, did Joab put you up to this? But the end of it is that Absalom is welcomed back. He can return to the family home in Hebron, which is about 5 miles, I think, south of Jerusalem. But he can't come and see the king. The king will not have him in his presence.
So says, now Joab, the son of Zeruiah, perceived that the king's heart was toward Absalom. And Joab sent to Tekoa and fetched thence a wise woman and said unto her, I pray thee, feign thyself to be a mourner and put on now mourning apparel and anoint not thyself with oil, but be as a woman that had a long time mourned for the dead. And come to the king and speak on this manner unto him. So Joab put the words in her mouth. And when the woman of Tekoa spake to the king, she fell on her face to the ground and did obeisance and said, Help, O king. And the king said unto her, What aileth thee? And she answered, I am indeed a widow woman. Remember, she's lying here. And mine husband is dead. And my handmaid had two sons. And they two strove together in the field, and there was none to part them, but the one smote the other and slew him. And behold, the whole family is risen against thine handmaid. And they said, Deliver him that smote his brother, that we may kill him, for the life of his brother is whom he slew. And we will destroy the heir also, and so they shall quench my coal which is left, and shall not leave to my husband neither name nor remainder upon the earth. And the king said unto the woman, Go to thine house, and I will give charge concerning thee. And the woman of Tekoa said unto the king, My lord, O king, the iniquity be on me and on my father's house, and the king and his throne be guiltless. And the king said, Whosoever saith aught unto thee, bring him to me, and he shall not touch thee anymore. Then said she, I pray thee, let the king remember the Lord thy God, that thou wouldest not suffer the revengers of blood to destroy any more, lest they destroy my son. And he said, As the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of thy son fall to the earth. Then the woman said, Let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak one word unto my lord the king. And he said, Say on. And the woman said, Wherefore then hast thou thought such a thing against the people of God? For the king doth speak this thing as one which is faulty, in that the king doth not fetch home again his vanished. For we must needs die, and are as water spilt on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. Neither doth God respect any person, yet doth he devise means that his banished be not expelled from him. Now therefore, that I am come to speak of this thing unto my lord king, it is because the people have made me afraid. And thy handmaid said, I will now speak to the king. It may be that the king will perform the request of his handmaid. For the king will hear to deliver his handmaid out of the hand of the man that would destroy me and my son together out of the inheritance of God. Then thine handmaid said, The word of the Lord the king shall now be comfortable. For as an angel of God, so is my lord the king to discern good and bad. Therefore, the Lord thy God will be with thee. Then the king answered and said unto the woman, Hide not from me, I pray thee, the thing that I shall ask thee. And the woman said, Let my lord the king now speak. And the king said, Is not the hand of Joab with thee in all this? In other words, the king's like, did Joab not put you up to this? And the woman answered and said, As thy soul liveth, my sword the king, none can turn to the right hand or to the left from aught that my lord the king hath spoken. For thy servant Joab, he bade me. And he put all these words in the mouth of thine handmaid. So she's being honest now, at least. To fetch about this form of speech, hath thy servant Joab done this thing, and my lord is wise, according to the wisdom of an angel of God, to know all things that are in the earth. And the king said unto Joab, Behold now, I have done this thing. Go therefore bring the young man Absalom again. And Joab fell to the ground on his face and bowed himself and thanked the king. And Joab said, Today thy servant knoweth that I have found grace in thy sight. My lord, O king, and that the king has fulfilled the request of his servant. So Joab arose and went to Geshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. And the king said, let him turn to his own house and let him not see my face. So Absalom returned to his own house and saw not the king's face.
So there's still some rift happening here. The governmental official, the father, the king, still has, you know, he loves his son, but he still has a little bit of standoffish issues. Now, do we see something like that with our government and some of our, you know, citizens? Is there some division where the government is just being a little bit too, maybe proud, standoffish? I'll let the listener decide. Of course, I think there is, with a government as complex as ours, I'm sure, there is that to some degree. Now, let's have a look at exactly who Absalom is, you know, because it specifically says that he's handsome and highly praised. In verse 25,
but in all Israel, there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. From the sole of his foot, even to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him.
Here, it says, no man in Israel was as handsome or highly praised as Absalom. I kind of paraphrase that a little bit. I'm kind of reading this out of the Holman Christian Standard Bible, by the way. A little departure from my usual ESV, but it was handy, and it says things pretty plainly. And so he's handsome. He's a nice-looking guy. Nobody more beautiful. I happen to think of the protesters out there. Hey, black is beautiful. You guys are the most beautiful people in this country. From the sole of your foot, or sole of his foot, to the top of his head. So hey, chew on that for a little bit. I don't have a problem with any people out there who are protesting, who have a beef with the king, as it were, the government. You're the star of the country, all right? He did not have a single flaw.
And when he polled his head, for it was at every year's end that he polled it, because the hair was heavy on him, therefore he polled it. He weighed the hair of his head at 200 shekels after the king's weight.
When he shaved his head, and he shaved it every year, because his hair got so heavy for him, he had to shave it off. He would weigh it, and it weighed 5 pounds, according to the royal standard. That's a lot of hair. I'm jealous. Even whenever I had the head full hair, I don't think it weighed 5 pounds after a year. It'd probably take me a few years to get that. So, hey, he's quite the striking dude. But here we go.
And unto Absalom there were born 3 sons and 1 daughter, whose name was Tamar. She was a woman of fair countenance. So Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem and saw not the king's face.
He's back. He's in his hometown, Hebron. For 2 years passed. So now, you know, total of 5 years have passed since the instance of the rape and the murder. Verse 27. 3 sons were born to Absalom, and a daughter named Tamar, who was a beautiful woman. It sounded like she's quite a striking figure that takes after her aunt. In verse 28, Absalom resided in Jerusalem for 2 years, but he never saw the king. So there was some initial satisfaction, some initial forgiveness, some initial reconciliation, but it was a little bit too small on the part of the king, on the part of the government, to make the citizen happy. They were back, but they just weren't satisfied. They weren't put back in their place of privilege. There's a word for you, being batted around today. Absalom sent twice to see the king. Let's see what happens there. In verse 29, Absalom sent to Joab in order to send him to the king. Remember, Joab is the right-hand man. You call him the vice president. He's the sergeant at arms, the commander of the army. There's nobody closer to the king in the body of politics than this guy. And Absalom, this beautiful, handsome man of the king, wants to talk to his dad. Be restored. You just have to know that. And he tries to talk to Joab, the right-hand man. But Joab was unwilling to come.
Therefore, Absalom sent for Joab to have sent him to the king, but he would not come to him. And when he sent again the second time, he would not come.
So he sent again a second time, but he still wouldn't come. Now, this moves into what I call not a peaceful protest. Because listen to this.
Therefore he said unto his servant, see, Joab's field is near mine, and he hath barley there. Go and set it on fire. Oh, that don't sound good.
In verse 30.
And Absalom's servant set the field on fire.
Then Absalom said to his servants, see, Joab has a field right next to mine, and he has barley there. Go and set fire to it. So Absalom's servants set the field on fire. So there we have it. We have an instance where the Bible talks about you want attention because you're not satisfied. There's violence being used, setting a fire, destroying this man's field, this crop. You know, not only is he commander, apparently he also has to rely on the harvesting a crop for his position. It goes on. Now, here's the thing. Violence gets a response. This is why we have these protests that break down into vandalizing and theft and burning and throwing bricks through windows. Violence gets a response. This is plain and simple. This is why in our modern world we have these protests that break down into violence. Cars and buildings are vandalized. Bricks are thrown through windows. Things are stolen. Things are looted. People get hurt. Because it gets a response. It gets a reaction. Now, is it the right thing to do? Well, it's effective because in verse 31, then Joab came to Absalom's house and demanded, why did your servants set my field on fire?
And then Joab arose and came to Absalom unto his house and said unto him, wherefore have thy servants set my field on fire?
Let me just stop right there. Violence. It got the attention. It got a response. Joab, another political person, says, why did you do this? Okay. Why do people protest today? Let me play this out using our protest situation today. We're not happy because there's good valid reasons. Okay. I'm not going to say that there's not. So we're going to break windows and vandalize things, burn down things. Okay. The press sees this. Your neighborhood sees this. Your government officials see this. And they say, or maybe they're not saying, why are you doing this? Maybe that's what the problem lies. Maybe no one's asking the right question. Why are you doing this? I'm asking you right now. Why are you doing this? You know what the response is? We're going to burn down more stuff, throw more bricks through windows, and keep on vandalizing. But wait. You have your stage, you front and center across the world because the media has their cameras on you. This is your time to say, why are you doing this? In this case, there is a message shared and violence ends. Now, there's also demands for an acceptable justice. So let's keep reading what this is about in verse 32.
And Absalom answered Joab, "Behold, I sent unto thee, saying, Come hither, that I may send thee to the king, to say, Wherefore am I come from Geshur? It had been good for me to have been there still. Now therefore let me see the king's face, and if there be any iniquity in me, let him kill me."
"Look," Absalom explained to Joab, "I sent for you and said, Come here. I want to sing to the king. Why have I come back from Geshur? I would have been better if I was still there." Wow. "So now let me see the king. If I'm guilty, let him kill me." Now, let me stop right there. Can you imagine today's protesters who suddenly have the voice of the right-hand man to the top dog of the country, and they say, "We were better off before." Well, what is the issue that the Black Lives Matter people had before? People talk about slavery. Well, that's a long time ago. Depression? Well, yeah, maybe. But so are they saying, you know, we'd be just better off, you know, living in the dregs of society rather than having a half-hearted resolution? I want to see the king. But I'm just saying, with our media today, you have the ear of the world. Say what you want. What reconciliation do you want? Put some proposals on the table. And are you willing to say, "Let the king judge me, and I will even accept death if that's what the king wants"? I bet you they won't do that. But Absalom is at least brave enough to say that.
So Joab came to the king and told him. And when he had called Absalom, he came to the king, bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom.
It goes on. The king hears this dissatisfied voice. In verse 33, Joab went to the king and told him. So David summoned Absalom. Now, let me pause here. Once this happens, honor is shown on both sides. Airplane. I don't know if we can wait for the airplane. They might be crop dusting. But anyway, there's honor, there's tact, there's some ambassadorship. This verse goes on to say, he came to the king and bowed down with his face to the ground before the king. Then the king kissed Absalom, which, and that's where the chapter ends. So there is reconciliation made. They honored each other. Absalom bowed. What if our protesters could stand in front of the president's office and bow and say, "Look, all I want you to do is hear me"? And the king does the greatest custom at the time, is to offer a kiss, a greeting, a welcome, which is, you know, that's the highest endorsement, the highest fellowship, friendship you can receive. And so there seems to be a mutual bond here of forgiveness. This is all in the past now. The whole thing about Amnon raping your sister and you killing Amnon for the rape, burning out in the fields. Hey, we've got, this is, you know, this seemed to be reconciling. Now, we can go on, but this is a good place to stop, because this is would be a good lesson for those disgruntled folks out there who want to take law in their own hands, who, when they have to, in this case, flee for 3 years, still be exiled for another 2 years once they're at home. To get satisfaction, you have to say what you want. And then once you have the audience with the ruling authority, in this case the king, are you willing to accept what he says, whether it be the ultimate death against you or a kiss of greeting back? Now, do people today do that? I'm going to say no. But you know what? It didn't work for Absalom either. But we're going to have to talk about that on a future installment.
Two. Two great books and one website. Visit scribingforeternity.org. There are two books that I would like to recommend you purchase. What they, meaning people who aren't Christians, other religions believe, and what we believe. Systematic Theology Made Simple. Both are great resources, especially if you plan on witnessing to somebody. Scribingforeternity.org.
Welcome to Romans Road, the podcast of me, Eddie Roman. This is where we talk about evangelism and apologetics and all kinds of Christian stuff.
Ray Comfort here. If you haven't yet subscribed to this podcast, please take a moment to do so now. On your phone's podcast app, search for Romans Road, and when you find it, hit subscribe. It's free, and by doing so, you'll get all episodes past, present, and future. Then when you're finished, head over to livingwaters.com for a huge collection of evangelism videos, articles, tracks, and resources to help you share the gospel with those around you. That's livingwaters.com.
Thanks for listening to Romans Road. If you want to learn how to evangelize, check out my book, Search and Rescue, available at eddieroman.com. On my website, you'll also find videos and other things to encourage you to preach the gospel to your friends and family. That's eddieroman.com. See you next time.
Promo is for podcasters there at the Christian Podcast Community. Folks who have a good message, a good ministry, support them and check out their shows. Check out their books. Check out their material. It's really good, sound theological stuff. And so with all that said and done, it's just time for me to sign off. Thanks for the additional comments from Nathan Caldwell. I would really I'd love to get back together in the studio and have a live show. Maybe we can work it out soon. Just have to see how things go. But hey, this is where I say this is your host Keith signing off. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Visit life-truth.com where you can find all our shows. Leave a message or call our voicemail number at 401-753-4844. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/LifeTruthPage. Follow us on Twitter at HHPNCAST. Everything Nathan Caldwell does can be found at facebook.com/protectorsofthebook. Music in the show is used by permission of Kevin Zerbe at zerbinator.wordpress.com. May the word of Christ dwell in you richly. May you find everything you need. And if you don't know Jesus, your greatest need is a Savior. Thanks for listening.